You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 18 December. We've got the Fed rate decision later tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from remote studios in Rosebank. All shows this week are recorded. We've got just two long interviews, no markets, no headlines. On the show today, Nerina Fisser, director at ETFSA, exchange-traded products, winners and losers and trends from 2024. We're talking products that includes AMCs and actively managed ETFs. And Viv Govender from Rand Swiss on the AI boom. I'm curious how the big tech stocks hope to make money, what are future trends, and that Tesla full self-driving suddenly looking real. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Nerina Fisser, ETFSA, of course. Nerina, I appreciate the time. You and I would have chatted around about this time last year for a year-end review, and we would have talked around how there was some really good movements, particularly in tech and offshore, and this year in the ETF space, some really, really good movements, but some of them are local. Property, I mean, it's been a bit of a wild year, a great year if you're an ETF holder.
Absolutely. So good morning, Simon. Yes, another brilliant year for the JSE listed exchange traded product segment. So let's look a little bit broader than just the funds, because there's certainly been a lot of movement elsewhere in the exchange traded product segment. Just maybe some stats at the outset. We saw this part of the industry grow from 170 billion to over 220 billion rand. That's just over 30% growth, with a nice balance between price gains, around 13%. Price gains, but more than 15% of that is attributable to new issuances. So we've seen a lot of new product come to market, but also a lot of our existing products adding to those. So really a strong positive story. And I think the other really interesting feature for me, number of products, we've increased from 214 to 248, which is now fast approaching the level of the number of listed shares that we have on the JSE. So I think certainly by the end of 2025, I think I'm fairly confident saying that there will be more exchange-traded products available on the JSE than there will be direct shares. But interestingly, not only new listings, 44 new listings, but it also had 10 delistings and some good and healthy consolidation, I think, that took place.
Yeah.
You might recall the Satrix APSA or New Funds merger, so there was some cleanup to be done there. The JSE went through an index harmonization process where they basically converged the all-share methodology and the so-called SWIX methodology. So we saw some cleanup in terms of that. And yeah, I think there may be just a few suboptimal ETFs delisted, all signs of a strong and healthy and robust sector.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the Satrix APSA. There was also the 10X. So I think that happened, was it not late last year? So perhaps it didn't fall into 2024. But an industry...
I would maybe venture to say that that wasn't really a merger. That was really bringing an ETF offering into a, call it a unit trust offering. And whereas the new funds and Satrix merger was actually a direct combination of several ETFs. And there were a couple of overlaps and duplicates, which needed some cleanup in the industry.
And it is, to your numbers, to the merger between the Satrix and APSA, it's an industry in robust health.
Yes, absolutely. And when we see these sort of consolidations or cleanups happening, it talks to efficiency, because when you have larger, deeper, more liquid products rather than a whole lot of little bit of the rats and mice, it's actually a very good and strong sign. And it's certainly something which is really great for investors all around.
Well, one of the big trends of the year was we've got, as you say, exchange traded products. We've got actively managed certificates coming. We've got actively managed ETFs arriving on the scene as well. They're not I think many of my listeners think ETF and think passive. Now, of course, that's not necessarily always true. This is kind of, I don't know, it's taking on the unit trust industry, but not the unit trust industry, more the LISPs, because it's that ease of JSE platform, which is the attraction.
Absolutely. And Simon, I think that is probably one of the strongest themes of 2024 is the rise of active within the exchange-traded product space. And when we look at what constitutes an actively managed ETF, you're absolutely right. Your more traditional actively managed unit trusts, we've seen certainly the introduction of those onto the JSE. And I agree with you. For me, it's more reflective of the JSE starting to fulfill a form of a LISP platform almost. A place where you can buy your investments. But I think the other thing that's also really interesting is when you look at the rules around, and I hate the term passive, but when you look at the rules around index tracking ETFs, it's in the name. You need to track an index. And we do have several asset classes or types of fund offerings where there are just no indices to track or easily trackable. And so you find within this actively managed space quite a range of products, some that are quite almost static and strategic in their allocation because we're looking at asset classes that are not easily replicated through an index. I'm thinking of some of our interest-bearing, our bond income options, but I also think of the likes of balanced funds, for example. And then the full spectrum all the way through to fully proper, actively managed products. And I think the joining of Coronation coming onto the JSE probably for many was a bit of a hallmark moment in terms of the bridging of what was traditionally thought of as active being unit trusts onto the space of exchange traded funds and specifically now actively managed exchange traded funds.
And that's just, and yourself and your colleagues, ETFSA listed the ETFA SAB fund, which is an actively managed back in August. And I got to say, I got some for my sister in the IPO process of a sort, and it's done surprisingly well, up 4.6%. In what, 3 months, which is not what I was expecting. I'll take it with both hands. But that's, you had to make it active because there wasn't a corresponding index.
Exactly. And Simon, when we look at the overall investment industry in South Africa, approximately half of the money invested are actually invested in so-called balanced funds, multi-asset portfolios. So we know that that is where the bulk of the assets sit. And yet when we looked at the ETF space, there were hardly any to be found. In fact, those old MAPS products, which was part of the new funds stable, the multi-asset portfolios that Satrix took over, they were really the only two of any consequence, less than 100 million rand in AUM for those two. But when we look now, we now have 8 balanced funds in ETF form on the JSE. AUM has increased by over 400%. We've now got 1.5 billion rand in balanced fund ETFs on the JSE. And I think it's only just started. It's only just begun. Yes, ETF SAB, the one that we at ETFSA launched, Easy Equities recently also launched a Reg 28 compliant balanced funds. And then most recently, we've now also seen the introduction of some 100% global balanced funds. So you're investing in a fully global portfolio, but on a multi-asset basis. And I certainly would suggest watch this space. I think it's an area of huge further development and differentiation that we're going to see in the ETF market.
Yeah, absolutely. With the top 40 up of sort of mid-teens at this point of the year, what for you was the, perhaps, I don't know, surprise standout in terms of returns?
So you've certainly done a great write-up in terms of, let's call it the ETF returns. I thought let's look slightly broader than that. And top of the pops there, as one might would expect, the single stock products that FNB offers. So it's the usual suspects. You do see Netflix at the top of the list there, Facebook, or also Meta, of course, rather called now. But even Goldman Sachs, those were sort of the three top performers. And then you get this variety of different, the big data stuff, the AI, the metaverse, you know, the FANG, those sort of ones, but we sort of expect them. What did surprise me somewhat that gold had an amazing year, but silver did even better than gold. Yeah. So certainly the precious metals has been a very strong standout performer. And then I think under the actively managed certificates, I think one that really stood out for me was the Denker Opportunity AMC, which is by Denker Capital. And that one invests specifically specifically in small cap stocks in South Africa. So this is another one that's quite difficult to offer in index tracking form. Small caps often are just not liquid enough, but Denga bringing an actively managed certificate to the table and said, right, we're going to actively manage, but specifically in this small cap space. And as we know, SA Incorporated local stocks had a great year in 2024, and that was very, very well captured by Denga in the Denga Opportunity AMC.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of these AMCs and the actively managed, is that it brings us that massive range, and it fundamentally, I think, is shifting the industry in a good direction. We'll leave it there. Nerina Fisser, Director, ETFSA, always appreciate the insights. Give your money smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Viv Govender, you find him, of course, at Rand Swiss. Viv, tech broadly, AI more specifically. I mean, we got ChatGPT version 3, just over 2 years ago. We're sitting here now in 2 years later. We're on 4.01 on ChatGPT. There really has been a huge explosion. The growth, the advancements that we've seen in the 2 years have been mind-blowing in senses. I mean, text to video, the music services, the 11 labs and voices, the growth has been insane.
Oh, yes, it has. It's been one of the fastest growing and best funded scientific revolutions of all time. If you look at the amount of money being pumped into this particular, it's a revolution, as you would say. We're talking, it rivals the space program by quite a bit. This is by far the most expensive infrastructure build-out ever done by the private sector. I think the thing that will come close to this would be the build-out of the 5G and stuff networks for, the mobile sector. But this, in terms of just a new technology, I think is the biggest ever. And I think the way you can see that is by looking at the guy that's selling the shovels for this particular gold rush, and that's NVIDIA.
Yeah.
And every single quarter, they come out with these incredible results. And even though it's the most valuable company in the world right now, people don't realize that. They think it's Apple slow, whatever. It's actually more valuable than Apple.
Yeah.
And it's happened in the last 2-3 years.
It has been an insane rush. And you mentioned NVIDIA selling the shovels. The buyers of those shovels are Microsoft, Meta, Alphabet, and we can see it in their CapEx and R&D spend. My question is, I mean, they're throwing huge money into this. Obviously, at some point, they want to start making money. I mean, how do they make money from AI? Or is it a case of we'll find that out in time? I still remember when, Meta was like, oh, they can't make money on mobile. Well, they proved everyone wrong about that.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I think it's the next versions of these programs are due out the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. Perhaps OpenAI might surprise us with giving us, GPT-5, at the last day of their 12 days of AI. Mm-hmm. It's unlikely they're going to give us nothing on the final day. I mean, it's like an advent calendar. You don't get the best prize on day three. You get it at the end. So I think it is going to be likely something big coming out at the end. And I do think that, those new models are going to have capabilities we believe that are going to be substantially better than what we've experienced so far. But the question is, are they going to hit a wall or something? The interesting fact I learned last week was apparently XAI, that's the Elon Musk company, was the first one to get a system up that had 100,000 of these GPUs, put together. And to understand how this stuff works is that, you basically need to have each of these GPUs understand what every one of the other 100,000 GPUs is thinking at any point in time in order to make it all coherent and to train a model. And up to the point that XAI came into it, they were thinking that the number for the maximum number you could do and be coherent was about 30,000. But apparently they've gotten to 100,000 and, this is like the Elon Musk effect. They're able to do things that other people can't just because they are, able to think from first principles. So, yeah. So the argument there is that, we are getting, because of scalability, as you know, the more compute, more data, better things that you get in the end, we are about to see new models coming out being trained on vastly larger systems. As when Grok 3 comes out, probably in February, we will actually have a close idea or a good idea what a and next generation kind of model looks like, maybe even more than GPT-5.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what these things can actually do. And then we'll know what the use cases could be that could earn money.
Absolutely. And I mean, Sora came out finally. I mean, it wasn't in beta. I think they were red teaming, blue teaming it since about February. That has suddenly arrived. Access, I think Britain and Europe are not getting it. Otherwise, Plus and Pro subscribers to ChatGPT or OpenAI get it. And I mean, and this is text to video, which, I mean, it's almost. I mean, I've seen this. I've played with it a bit. It is absolutely astounding. But it's kind of brushing. I think we're losing the sense of just how amazingly awesome this is.
Yeah, I mean, right now anyone can go with a WhatsApp and talking about a specialized program. Just with your WhatsApp, which I think the majority of people have. You can go there and you can ask, Meta's model to draw you a picture of something.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first saw the stuff coming out from, these models about a couple of years ago. And I showed it to my wife and said, my God, this is incredible. I actually remember calling her to the room and saying, look at this stuff and saying, look at this, this is magical. And now it's available on everybody's WhatsApp. And I think most people have never used it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, but video, I think, is the real danger here. And the reason that places like the EU and stuff are banning it is that we are about to get to a point where we can no longer trust video. We can't trust, photos anymore. And the reason that most people don't see how good the photos are is because they just can't prompt them properly.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand what instructions to put in. But if you have a person that knows how to prompt these things, the photos that come out, they look like photos you take with your camera.
Yeah.
They look absolutely realistic. And in a few years' time, we're going to get to the same point with video. Video isn't at the point now. Video is like how photos were 2 years ago, where you have missing fingers or extra fingers, or if you look closely enough, you see that the teeth don't kind of match or the writing is not right. So you can't spot the actual things. But photos, at the moment, you cannot spot. I cannot spot an AI photo and a real photo. And even if I know what to look for, like in terms of like the fingers and the different things that it usually gets wrong, I can't spot them right now. And in a couple of years' time, it could be that with video, at which point in time, you cannot believe anything that you see online.
Yeah.
And, that's going to be the real danger going forward.
Yeah, we are in a new wild world. You and I have chatted a lot about Tesla over the years. You've always made the case that you've got to look at Tesla as a tech company, as an AI company. If you look at it at a motor vehicle company, none of the numbers make sense. They're full self-driving, and I think it's 13.2 that come out. It's relatively new out. By reports, it is knocking it out the park. It seems to have leapfrogged Waymo and really sort of got to a point where the car can be autonomous.
Yes. This is something I think that's come about because of the fact that Tesla basically went back as soon as the AI stuff started to be more realistically, most of us known about it. They went back and they basically revamped how they were training it. So even though this is 13.2, as you can see, it's probably like version 2 or something.
Yeah.
Because this is a totally new technology that they're using to actually get to this point. And that is, I think, the important factor that they have achieved this thing, not from multiple years, you're talking about from the time Tesla started till now. They've actually achieved this particular, version of full self-driving in the last 2-3 years, because that's when they actually started training with the new systems made available with machine learning to get what we have right now. And like you said, yes, there are a few bugs left, so it's not perfect just now. But it's getting very close to a point at which you're going to easily say this is better than a human driver.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that Elon Musk, with his relationship with Trump, is actually going to be able to take advantage of that, because the argument they're going to make is that the rumor is that what they're going to do is they're going to make, if you can get self-driving approved in one jurisdiction, it's going to be countrywide. It's not going to be a case of self-driving is approved in California, then it's approved in Texas, it's approved in wherever. If self-driving is approved, it's approved everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's going to be like you have a driver's license in California, you can use it in Florida.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And this is going to be different from Waymo, because Waymo right now is approved in various individual cities. It's not a universal program. Obviously, Waymo, if they could get this stuff together, would be able to also piggyback on this particular thing. But the thing with Waymo, as you mentioned, is the fact that they also have far more expensive cars, because the sensors are much more expensive. And they have a different technology that requires like mapping of the whole area they're working in and so on. So they can't just walk in a new area without any extra help. but Tesla can. So it's going to be a much more widely available system as soon as we get to a point where you can say reasonably, as it goes confidently, it's better than a human driver.
Yeah. And I mean, those Waymos with their LiDAR, I think they're around $120,000 per vehicle, full self-driving. I mean, a Tesla, you get the entire Tesla for half of that. We'll leave it there. Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, always appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. What really drives the Rand?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.